October 20, 2021. It's a Watt for Pedro show.
I was trying to do something. I was trying to do something. Please. That was the thing I wanted to do in music, see. And I figured I could do two things. I could have a band that played like the way we used to play, uh-huh. And a band that was going in the direction that the one I have now is going. I could combine these two with these two concepts going on. And it could have been that.
Yeah, somehow I was quite bitter and claims that you've stolen all of your ideas from him, and in fact that everybody has stolen all of their ideas from him, which is rather exaggerated.
Yeah, maybe something too. Maybe some truth to it. I've heard him, and I know that he's done some things that I've wanted to do. I'm
Watch for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday. Start off John Coltrane talking to Frank Kosky, November 1966. Spiel about Sun Ra. Of course, he couldn't say any mean things about him because, yeah, he's into the same kind of thing. And then you can hear, probably, guess that I'm not man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, right?
I got yep.
Sam Rowell. Welcome aboard, Sam.
Hello, everybody.
Yep, and big love to Brother Bill Nace for making the connect.
He is a man that I
me,
truly
gave
respect.
Me a lot of great music, but a lot of it was from this project called Elo Omo.
That's right, Elo Omo.
Okay, the first one I did was Oldingville, September 001. Now, I'm curious about your journey through music, so please enlighten us by first bringing your earliest musical recollection.
Wow. My first musical recollection is the Emperor's theme from Star Wars. That was the first movie my dad took me to see. I was about 3 years old. That's the first music I remember hearing. My parents didn't really listen to a lot of music. They weren't particularly musically inclined people. We did not have a record player. My mom killed Huey Lewis's sports cassette in her car, but that was really the Emperor's theme. That's the first thing that really I remember.
So the pad you grew up in had no musical instruments?
Not until I expressed an interest.
Oh, okay. You brought them into the pad.
Yeah.
What was the first record you bought with your own money, Sam?
It was Never Mind the Bollocks.
Sex Pistols.
Sex Pistols, yep.
And what was the first gig you went and saw?
Haha, the first gig I saw was Ozzy Osbourne and Queensryche and Suicidal Tendencies at the Summit in Houston, Texas.
And, you know, and that was like a big, heavy record for the movement. But you're a couple years down the road. Yeah, you don't go for Nirvana or Green Day. You go for
the
original daddies.
Well, you know, it was sitting there at the Sam Goody.
Yeah.
And it looked intriguing. I mean, up to that point, I'd only really been listening to stuff on the radio and classical music.
And that probably wasn't on the radio a lot.
No, it wasn't.
Those colors, too. You know, whoever came up with the color scheme was like lime green and pink. It's just so bizarre.
It's funny. I bought two cassettes that day,
yeah.
And I was clearly buying them for the color palette, because the other cassette was De La Soul's 3 Feet High.
Oh, they had trippy ass colors too. Yeah. But that's also a good record, also.
Great record.
They're both good records, yeah. Well, what about at school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
I was in the orchestra. I played upright bass in the orchestra in school.
And how did you land on that? Was it given to you, or did you choose?
No, I chose. They had a you know, recruitment drive to get people to join the orchestra. And they sent all the high school orchestra people over to the elementary schools and middle schools to demonstrate the instruments. And I chose the bass. I wanted to play bass.
You were like in grade school.
I was 9 years old.
Wow.
I was in fourth grade, okay. And I just felt completely drawn to it. I was insistent. My parents had to buy a new car because we only had a rabbit and it wouldn't really fit. They were sure I wouldn't be strong enough to play it. And, you know, but my parents were on board. You know, it was a crazy idea in hindsight. And the first couple years I played it, I couldn't really carry it. You know, I carried a couple steps and I'd have to lay it down and take a break by sitting on it, you know, and people would be like, "Do you need help, little girl?" And I would turn it down every time.
How would you do prac? Because it probably had to stay at school, right?
My parents rented one for me.
Ah, so you had one at home and one at school.
I had one at home and one at school. Yeah, and in the early days, they were like, you know, they're plywood. They were,
sure,
you know.
Sure, sure. Kind of the rockabilly ones. Okay. Well, like a real good one, spruce soundboard, but man, that's a bunch of bucks. So yeah, plywood.
Yeah.
You know, and then those rockabilly guys, they'd climb up on those motherfuckers. A lot of showbiz. And also, like, double as a drummer, right? I think that's where Larry Graham got some of his slapping from, because they were doing that in the fucking 50s. Hitting the string, the neck with the string.
Yeah, and hitting the back, too.
Yeah. So you're like, you're your own drummer. You're accompanying yourself you know, a weird kind of percussive thing. Bill Black, right? He did that with the Elvis and shit.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. But you're right. Hard to get around. And it wasn't just because you being a lady and littler. It was hard on the dudes, too. They'd have, and from what I've read, you know, no torn in boats yet. They're or vans. They're in station wagons. So they got to tie these motherfuckers to the roof. So Leo Fender, this is one of the reasons why he comes up with this thing called, he called the precision bass.
Historic.
You know why he called it that?
Why?
Because it's got frets.
What did you say, bass players can't play in tune?
Leo played a little bit of piano and some saxophone, but he invented these things like electric guitar and electric bass for his friends. So it's really practical, his innovations. Like he's trying to help him out.
Sure.
Like, so basically he takes, you know, his electric guitar idea and puts a little steroids on it, and he comes up with a bass guitar. And, it's because, you know, with that timbre and shit like that, the symphonies wanted all these things in the same kind of shape. They're just bigger and smaller, right? Now, with the stand-up's a little different because it's also tuned in fourths with all those other guys are in fifths, yeah. I guess they wanted ours clumped more. You gave me this, I mean, some of these pieces you got were really long, and I love them, you know, but one of them I had to put into three parts, and we're going to have to play on the next two shows because it was a fucking hour by itself. But we're gonna, I love it, and we're going to play it. But
well, thank you.
In different parts. the what Peter show would have to be 5 hours instead of three. So, but anyway, this Friends and Heroes, Volume 1, Colin Langer and Semrawell. Let's listen.
All right.
wall. Zilla starts talking back. Zilla starts talking back. Until it starts talking back! Until it starts talking back! Until it starts!
Pedro Show. Start off that chunk of music, Colin Langanus.
Yeah, Longinus.
Longinus. Okay, fuck. Sorry.
That's all right. I think you've talked to him.
I did. You know, there's no reason for me being stupid like that. He was beautiful. Samuel with Friends and Heroes, Volume 1. Then we had brand new from Deerhoof, off their new album, Epic Love Poem. Landowner out of England with This Could Mean Something. Hi, Reeve. Arcellation. Maybe that's a made-up word. San Lockward. Iowa City collab with me. SLWCC Watt. God Beard Complex. Victoria Shin. Excerpt from her Kolaka Flashlight in the Mouth. Head Boggle off his new album. Hoedown's tune. And then Maury Lowell, Omo, Mean Street. So I'm guessing your first gigs that you do with the fucking bass is probably school one.
Absolutely.
Well, because there's another mode, right? Now, I'm not talking about graduating, but afternoon, after school, the bedroom band, the garage band, the basement band. But stand-up, you know, did you do that thing?
Did I do which thing? Play the stand-up bass in front of people?
Well,
or the bedroom band?
School, yeah, because the bedroom is band is you and your peers, right? The other thing is from school and you're being trained and you're part of the orchestra. And,
yeah, no, I
they're both music and they're both valid, but I'm just wondering if you just did the school thing or did you have this parallel universe?
No, I started playing electric when I was like 12. Got my hands on one of those, and you know, I was already pretty much in love with the bass.
Now that's easy to get a jam thing going with your buddies, right?
Yeah. I was in a couple bands.
What'd you get? Fender?
Really? I had a Guild Pilot. It's actually the bass I still have. I've been playing that bass forever.
It's great. And what about amp?
The first one was a crate that was actually in a wooden box. I think it was a 40 watt crate.
Yeah, Fender ended up buying that and kind of an econo brand for them.
yeah. I mean,
it worked. You know, my first
it was a PV.
You know, poor carpenter blames his tools, right, or her tools. So tell me about these after school bands, these jam bands.
Oh, we just played cover songs, and one band was mostly we would play AC/DC cover songs, because the guy whose house we practiced at and who also played guitar, that's what he wanted to do. And the other band, I'd play some funk, you know. And at that point, I was still reading music to jam with people. Like I would get a tab book and read the music, play it like that. Like, I wasn't listening.
What, you mean tabs or standard? Yeah. Well, at school, they weren't having you do tabs. You were reading music.
No. I'd go to the mall, and I'd be like, oh, I need to learn Jailbreak 77, and I'd get an AC/DC tab book, you know?
Like, no, but like at school, when you're doing the orchestra stuff?
Oh, yeah, no, you got to read music. Yeah, they teach you. They teach you that first. They don't even let you play until you can flashcards
and
with the lines.
Tab is the hardest fucking thing to read on the fly.
The numbers,
everything's too little. It's organized all stupid. It's really slow. You can get it, but man, it's not really good for on the fly stuff.
It's not really hard when you're talking AC/DC songs.
Oh yeah, well,
there's a lot of repetition there.
Yeah, but also maybe training the ear. You don't really have to, you know, just by learning off the records, maybe too.
Yeah, It never occurred to me until like much later. To just sit down and listen to something and learn to play it. And I found that to be easier.
Much easier than reading music. You were training your ear. Yeah. And you know, some of those things are wrong.
They sure are.
Especially the fucking tabs on the internet. Oh my God. I've seen the most ridiculous. I mean, like, what are these people hearing? So, yeah. But you know what? You had to find that out by doing it, you know. It's like skateboarding or anything like that. You learn.
Well, I had such a really very academic introduction to music. Like the idea of just making some shit up and playing it for no reason, it never occurred to me. You know?
Were you in the situation, the great skilled, taskmasters, right? Because they don't improvise. You just hand them sheets of music and they execute.
Yeah,
hey, jam an E minor. What?
What? Yeah. No, my bass teacher, at one point, the jazz band asked me to join the high school. And my bass instructor said I shouldn't do it because playing jazz would ruin me. That's what she said.
You know, it's funny.
maybe she was right.
Everybody who's been on the show that I talk about this kind of stuff, this classical training, when they want to bring up improvisation, they bring in jazz.
Yeah.
Like that's the only way to fucking... You can also improvise and not knowing what the fuck you're doing, right? And call it whatever, jazz, yeah. or naz, or baz, or saz. I mean that, but that's trippy. I've had this, I took some jazz classes. We improvised. Why? I was like, oh, okay. Because improvise means you just make up stuff that it's not on paper, right? You're just going for it. Actually, if it's more than one person, you're trying to make a conversation, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So it's not like, wow, I learned jazz motifs, some jazz formats from 40 years ago. I got that covered.
Yeah, I mean, jazz is such a living thing. Like to
right.
Even think back to, like, you did take the A train or whatever. I mean, it's just a living mosaic.
People who are passing through,
you know.
It's trippy you brought that tune up, because there's a famous story about Atlantic Records want Charlie Mingus, Stanley Clark, to make a record.
Oh, that new guy.
right. This is the late 60s or something, early 70s. And so first thing Charlie Mingus wants to do, right, is teach him take the A-train. Like, Stanley Clark, I don't want to learn.
I'm not going to have any part of that.
I bet you regret saying that now, but I mean, right, you always got to have some respect for the cats before. I mean, you got to move ahead too, I understand, and be your own man.
But if Charles Mingus wanted to teach me to play Take the A-Train, I would.
I would listen.
Yeah, whatever. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. I'd take that lesson too.
He had a huge fucking bad opinion of electric bass. Oh, yeah, I saw Lionel Hampton. His guy was trying to do that, you know, like 1948 or something. Actually, I think it was like a stand-up that had a pickup in it or something. It wasn't a Fender bass yet.
But, well, Monk Montgomery. Do you know Monk Montgomery?
Yeah.
He has a story about Mingus, like, basically, because he was one of the first people to start playing electric bass on jazz records. And he says he was the first person ever recorded playing electric bass. But I think that's a bit apocryphal. But he said that Mingus just gave him no end of shit. Just. You know, he didn't care that he also could play upright. Like,
but you know, I think there's a big, like, we're all into James Jamerson, right? We love Carole King, Joe Osborne. They're great too. But those are guitar players that make the switch. Mr. Jamerson comes from the stand-up.
Yeah.
And he really, every one of us, I think, on electric bass, owe that man. But I think it was from him no one else will rock the bass. So I'll get off the guitar. And nothing wrong with that, because, you know, that was very practical, and, you know, and we owe those people a lot too. But he actually makes the bridge, you know, the stand-up world into the electric bass, you know, and he really gives it its own voice. And if those guys would have met, wouldn't that have been some kind of meeting? Charlie Mingus and Jamerson, just to talk about bass.
Here's another thing.
Mr. Mingus would not compose on the bass. He always did it on the piano.
On the piano, that's right.
And I think part of the future of bass guitar is composition tool. I really do. But anyway, let's get back into your story. So these bands, they're just for fun. You're copying songs off records.
Yeah.
Do you start writing your own material anytime during this period?
No, it wasn't until I got to college that I started writing my own material.
And you go to college for higher education with music, right?
No. I went to college.
It was a guess.
Yeah, no, I studied chemistry. By the time I got to college, I already decided that, I mean, I wanted to go to college to study music, but I burned out like my left wrist practicing too much. And I got a terrible, terrible case of carpal tunnel, and I had to just stop playing upright for 8 months.
Oh, so you know what bass it was. It wasn't the electric. It was the upright.
It was absolutely the upright. The amount
41,
of strength.
Yeah, 41-inch yeah. scale, right?
Yeah.
Compared
you
to the 34-inch on a P bass.
Yeah, you got to have so much strength, too, to push down those strings when they're vibrating.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's I mean, it's just unreal. So I just dropped that, and I decided that I'd been going about things all wrong. I started playing more electric and just playing whatever I felt like playing, and decided I was never going to play any music written by any dead white men anymore. Like, I was like, done. Like, sorry, Mahler, sorry, Beethoven, Strauss, Bach. I'm not doing this anymore. This isn't what I want to do. It's not where it's at.
Mr. Wagner, you use the bass voice for the fucking the guy who builds the ring, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's appropriate. It's appropriate. But yeah, so I started playing bass, like electric bass, more and more, and went to college, met all these new people, you know, people who just had experiences a lot different than me. But I couldn't really. I tried out for like a bunch of bands because that's like, you know, the first week of class, there's just like flyers everywhere, you know. We're starting a band. We need a bass player. We need a drummer. Somehow everybody played guitar, right?
Yes.
And
somehow.
So
Sam, you're going to have to continue on because we're at the end of the first hour, October 2021.
Oh,
2021 edition. Juan Peter's a special guest. Sam, how do you pronounce this? Rowell? Roll?
It's like towel.
Towel. Okay. Row. Like row. Sam Row. Okay. Hold tight for hour two. Over 2021, it's second hour of Juan Pedro Show. for Pedro show. Although Houston, what was his name? Bushwick Whip Bill. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scarface. And, yeah.
And the Ghetto Boys.
Yeah, good band, good band. By the Skin of Our Teeth, Elo Omo. And then ID DeFamel was I Feel Anxiety. And then the Klein Oak High School Orchestra with La Tosca. Puccini. So this is like a recorder you playing as a kid, right?
Yeah, yeah. Our orchestra was actually, our little public school orchestra was voted the best orchestra in the state of Texas. And we went to a convention in San Antonio and played for the Texas Music Educators Association. And they made that professional grade recording in like 1993.
So that's probably your first recording set.
That's my first recording. That's why I sent it to you. I didn't really think you needed any Puccini in your life, but... You know, I was looking through and I was like, that's really funny that I got this CD. This is my first appearance.
Yeah, well, it's
on recorded media.
It's been used as a springboard launch pad for all kinds of stuff. I remember a fucking cereal, right? No more Rice Krispies. Some bullshit. It's been pounded into my mind. But you guys did beautiful here. You did beautiful.
Oh,
tell me about
you.
This, Elo. So, okay, you're trying out for bands at college. And
yeah,
I didn't
get the nod, and I thought, you know, like I had some good pieces in my repertoire. You know, like I'd come in and do Blister in the Sun. You know, like I was showing off myself.
Brian Ritchie.
But, yeah, but I didn't think that I didn't think they wanted a woman in their band, frankly.
Oh,
I think
shit.
That's what I came up with.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I
you know,
I,
there was a Houston band, My Dolls. Maybe you're too young.
I don't,
but there was
yeah,
a hardcore. Yeah, in the 80s, there was an all-woman band called My Dolls.
Yeah, no, I was really taken by the Pain Teens. That was the
band that I saw
in Houston that I really liked. And then there was this metal band called Dead Horse that I was pretty obsessed with.
Okay. And Montrose, right? That's kind of arts. Rudyard's stage.
Yeah, Rudyard.
Poetry and, yeah, okay.
That's where it happens in the Montrose.
Yeah, right, right. In fact, the representative.
Still happening.
The representative from Corwood Industry, right? two gigs with him.
Man, that mystery man. Yeah, he sure is.
Beautiful guy. Beautiful guy. What a dresser. Oh, my God. but eventually, is Elo Omo come out of this experience?
Well, no, there was a band before Elo Omo that I started with two of my roommates and two women who lived in the dorm next door.
Ah, so you had to end up making your own band instead of joining somebody else's.
Yeah.
Maybe that was better, though, Sam.
I think it was because we really came up with something. It was a really unique band. We had two basses, no guitar. Our drummer was really into, like, serious math rock, and we had two singers, but they didn't sing together. They sang their own songs. And it was pretty terrifying, I think, for people. We were nice people, but our band was really scary and intimidating. And
band name?
Chiquita.
Oh, okay. I'm going to play some of that in the third hour. I didn't know the chronology.
Chiquita.
Okay. This is great. It's from a 7-inch, right? There were two
7-inches that we put out. And, we wrote those songs. Those are the only rock songs I really ever wrote, the songs on those 7-inches. And then, 1996, about 3 years after, been playing with Chiquita, and like we worked hard. We played all over Boston, like all sorts of DIY shows, you know, like we were really out there.
Right. You went to college in Boston?
I went to college in Boston.
Okay. And there's a lot of clubs there. I know that, man. Huge scene.
A lot of clubs, a lot of bands, a lot of action. It was a good time to be in Boston.
And not just Boston, you know? The Northeast, right? Everything's close.
I didn't have a car then, so we weren't really, we were still pretty provincial, but, I met a man who is my partner even now in life, Tim Leance, and, we started playing music together, and that project became Elo Omo.
Okay.
He was the one, and him and some other folks that I was hanging out with and listening to records with were really into free jazz. And that changed the whole trajectory. Like, because before, like, I'd gotten into, gotten pretty obsessed with bands that didn't have, like, guitars in them, like Cop Shoot Cop and Godhead Silo and Man is the Bastard and the Ruins. And, like, I was just
Cop,
like,
Shoot Cop is two bass.
They are. Yeah. They are. And so I was just super, like, did into
you know
that.
Ghost?
I liked Ghost a lot.
Did you know back then about us?
I did. Whoa. I did. I was lucky enough to do air at the college radio station.
Okay.
Which had an amazing punk rock library.
I don't know where this is in the timeline of Elo or Mo, but I want to play Southie. Now Southie makes sense that you said Boston. Southie Nove 999.
I think. Yeah.
Thank you. What's your name? I got a name too. And if you like me, I can wave to the zoo. Cause we are animals, about the animals. They ain't animals and animals like enemies. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. And we can wear on each other. And we wear on each other. And we can wear on each other. I laugh on your tears, you cough them up. I laugh on your tears, you cough them up. Left on your teeth, cover my clip, and we never said another on the way to appear. What's your name? I got a name too. And if you like me, I could wear it to the zoo. Cause we all animals, about the animals. They eating animals and animals like enemies. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Who's your friend? I got a friend too. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Who's your friend? I got a friend too. And we can wear on each other. And we wear on each other. And we can wear on each other. And we wear on each other. A laugh on your tears, you cough them up. A laugh on your tears, you cough them up. A laugh on your tears, you cough them up. A laugh on your tears, you cough them up. Clear fan, we never said another on our way to appear. What's your name? I got a name too. And if you like me, I could wear it to the zoo. Cause we all animals, all about the animals. They ain't animals and animals like enemies. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Who's your friend? I got a friend too. And we can wear on each other. And we wear on each other. And we can wear on each other. And we wear on each other. Left on your tears, cuff them up. 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 Clip and we never said another on our way to appear. What's the name? I got a name too. And if you like me, I could wave to the zoo. Cause we all animals, about the animals. Dating animals and animals like enemies. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. And we can wear on each other. And we wear on each other. And we can wear on each other. And we wear on each other. Laugh on your tears, you cuff them up. Laugh on your tears, you cuff them up. Laugh on your tears, you cuff them up. Clip and we never said another on the way to your field. Laugh on your tears, you cuff them up. Laugh on your tears, you cuff them up. Left on your tears, you cuff my clip, and we never saw another on the way to appear. What's your name? I got a name too. And if you like me, I can wear you to the zoo. Cause we are animals, about the animals. Taking animals and animals like enemies. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Who's your friend? I got a friend too. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Who's your friend? I got a friend too. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Are you a friend to me? I got a friend too. Who's your friend? I got a friend too. Are you a friend to me? Who's your friend? I got a friend too.
Watch for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Iloamo, Southie Nove 999. Now, where did the name come from?
Iloamo was a member of Sun Ra's orchestra.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And Tim and I, the drummer in Iloamo, were watching a Joyful Noise documentary about Sun Ra, sure. And we had yet to choose a name for the band, and everyone in the orchestra is just like, they're with it, they're happy people, they are into their monastic existence, except for this one guy. They interview this dude, and he's like angry. He's like, people ask me when I go out and what I do for fun. Well, this is my fun. You know, he was really aggressive about you know, people questioning his devotion to this sort of really weird out there music. And Tim and I both thought that this guy was great. You know, like, he's really the standout of the documentary. They flash his name on the bottom of the screen. His name is Iloamo.
Ronnie Boykin, I remember the bass man. He ended up writing a lot of the tunes. The composer also, too. Tiny Pyramids I did with Bucky Pope out of Madison. And Johnny Machine from Tortoise.
Yep.
Yeah, a beautiful thing. And Sun didn't write all the stuff. He let the bass player have some.
Yeah.
So, of course. So you named the band after, okay.
Yeah, and it was, you know, like, it was a spur-of-the-moment thing. We had a gig. We had our first gig coming up, and we didn't have a name.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, it's a hard name to spell. It's a hard name to say. It doesn't make any sense to people. You know, it probably would have been better.
A lot of those names come from, because they got taken from them, and they're trying to remember the Africa.
Yeah.
You know, Shaquille and these kind of things. They're not just out of nowhere. They're kind of memories.
I feel like in the orchestra, they're definitely space names, you know.
Oh, that too.
You know, like they're looking out like the cosmic dark and like a place where, you know,
black people could
be free in the future or something.
Well, have you read John Sweat's book, Space is the Place?
I absolutely have.
Okay. Yeah. And he talks about this idea, when he found out, he thought that there was a white idea that no way Egyptians could have been Africans.
Oh, how would they build those pyramids?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And this got him going on it. Yeah, it's fucking ridiculous. Stuff like that. You know, I grew up Navy housing and with all kinds of people, and there's no room for that kind of shit. So, but he was trippy, too. He would bring guys off the street to be in the band, you know. So all of a sudden they'd be playing, and then you had cats like John Gilmore that turned down Duke Ellington.
Tell me
about that first gig, Iloamo.
Oh yeah, Iloamo's first gig was in Somerville, Massachusetts, at 12 Wyatt Circle, colloquially known as Fat Day House. Fat Day being an amazing hardcore band from that era in Boston. And those guys all lived together and had shows in their basement. We played with Lightning Bolt.
Rhode Island.
Yep, that was our first show. So it was a real bass-heavy night.
Were you scared?
I was terrified.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm still scared.
Yeah, me too.
Every time. Even though it's, like, now hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows, I get up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, can I do it tonight? Yeah. Like, I'm just making this stuff up. What if I forget? What if it's bad? And I think that until it starts, and then I don't think about it.
Yeah,
and everything's great.
The muscle memory takes over. Or the stuff you pounded in that's beyond your brain and worrying and kvetch. I know about it, too. It's a kind of responsibility. These people worked all week, and you're going to waste their fucking money by blowing clams all fucking night? But this gig was a success, though.
I think so. Okay, I think so. Okay. I mean, I definitely think that we were a bit overshadowed by Lightning Bolt.
But like Ishmael, you lived to tell the tale.
Hey, man, they knew. They were already, like, locked in. We were
What's
still
his name? Mr. Gibson, right?
Brian
banjo
Gibson.
A little banjo string on that G.
Yeah, man.
We're at the end of the second hour.
Man, it goes
October 2020. Tissue up for Peter, so special guest. Sam Rowell. Roll Tech Fire 3. October 20, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watch for Peter show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with Evil Eye Land. And this is a collab between Iloamo and Martin Escalante, Sex Man. Enlighten us, Sam.
Well, we've Iloamo is, we're an improv band. We are firmly devoted to the spirit of making it up as we go along. But we're not really in the improv game of just sort of throwing down with anyone, you know, like getting together. We're a band. We're an improv band. We rarely play with other people, but we met Martin and we just really, really liked the way that he played the saxophone, and we've had a really productive musical relationship with him. We played our first show back since the COVID a couple weeks ago with he and a great bass player from Peru named Tete Leguia. And we got together at our rehearsal space and just like recorded some stuff, and Martin put it out on his record label. And you know, it's I really appreciate it when someone comes correct, you know, and Martin always comes correct. You know, you never have to worry about putting in more work than Martin, you know, like you're going to collaborate with Martin. He'll always do the first 10%.
Not going to
He's going to throw it down. You're not going to be like pulling anybody else's weight. Like
right,
he's there.
Right.
He's there to like give it all when he plays. He's going to give it all like making the recordings, putting out the CD, making it look good. Like, yeah, he's a good guy. I'm very, very like happy to have met him.
Speaking of a book called The Free Music, have you guys ever played with Jack Wright?
No.
Okay. He's an older man, even older than Watt. And he wrote a book called The Free Music. And I've met him because of these guests on here. And I had him on the show myself. And I was wondering, because he likes playing with younger people and showing him the thing of the improv, you know, the free jazz. It's a lot about listening, I guess. I got to tell the people what else we heard. The Gollum Part 2. I've been playing 15 parts of this. What was her name? Mary Shelley. Frankenstein. She used part of the story for her thing, right? And this is Margaret Baird, Charlie Soffley, Jeremiah Lockwood. And it's a project called Reboot. Yeah, The Gollum Part 2. Next bunch of episodes, I'm going to do all the Gollum. Then Ray Sheehan with his Nerve Driver. And finally, Gag from Chiquita. Now, this was your first single, right?
Gag was off the second single.
Oh, okay. Got that wrong, too.
That's all right. That's all right. It came in very close to
session. Look. You got this other one, 80 O'Clocker or something. Eight O'Clocker.
Yeah, eight O'Clocker.
Now, was this first single or second single?
That's the...
Why? I lost you.
You got me here? Can you hear me?
Now I can, but...
All right.
Something happened. You fall down?
I fell down.
Okay. 8 o'clock, or is it first or second?
That's off the first single.
Okay, let's listen.
All right.
tape recording number 6810C03, SO Class 8 10. The 10th lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard to students of the First Class 8 course on board the flagship Apollo on the 3rd of October 1968. The title of this lecture is Assists. This tape lecture has been classified confidential. Copyright 1968 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This tape has been re-recorded by the audio unit of the flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization.
All right, now if the PC at that moment were gave an aspect of relief and looked well, you would say, that's good. You understand, he has to be an OT3 or this sort of thing wouldn't be happening to him. You don't run this on people below that level, you kill them. So he says, yes, oh, that's great. Oh, my God, am I ready? God. And you say, all right, good, that's fine. Thank you very much. And let him take it up himself. Now, he's going to go on the basis that they all blew. And I got news for you on a cluster. They don't always all blow. There are 15 of them left. It looked so spectacular to see such a mass and disintegrate and so many of them leave. But there might be some still around. Now, you have to finish running the engram out to that degree and run incident one on each separate one of them. And they go, but gone, but cleans it up. Because the funny part of it is let us say, good talk. And then you found this, and if you've dated this thing, you've got some substance of what it was all about, and all of a sudden you've got this, gone, you know. Still want to be left with a bit of a subject. You're going to say, well, that's natural. No, it isn't natural. That's the 10 or 15 you left. That's the engram. The engram is still remaining with those few. Do you follow? Now, also, there's a copy. Now, Thetan's copy. What has just been copied? Thetan's copy, what has been copied, and make copies of the copies. You get the idea. So you get this kind of a thing. The thing came off your back. See? Came off. Gone. But the mass is still there. All right, who's copying the Thetan who just left? That's the trick. Well, this one is copying, and there goes that mass. Cross-copying. And you run into a lot of this cross-copying and so on as you try to run this stuff. Got it? But for the purposes of an assist, goodbye, Joe, see you later. Oh, you know, that's good enough, boy. You don't push your luck. Well, that's good. Get on it with it someday. Let him recover. Let him get his breath.
talk today about freedom. We talk about freedom. That's a very important thing. Wow. I mean, you couldn't overstate the importance of freedom. Couldn't. But freedom, 1776, reads a lot different than freedom 1956. It's a different word. And we get one of the fundamental tricks of the agent saboteur, which is change the meaning of the word. Don't change the word. Define it differently. You can take a whole people and bankrupt them of any freedom or civil liberty simply by changing the definition. Don't change the word. Now, President, we had President Frankie. He used to talk about freedom from. That isn't the way it was defined in 1776. Boy, these boys were on. Have you ever read the Declaration of Independence? That is a fascinating document. And with what fascination I read the other day the Supreme Court's opinion of the Declaration of Independence. You didn't know that it had an opinion, but it does. The Declaration of Independence has never been used to clarify decisions presented to the court. It says, because it is not considered a legal or fundamental document of the United States of America.
No.
What they said? It is not a legal document. It is not that thing upon which American liberty is founded. American liberty is founded on the Constitution of the United States, which is founded, of course, on the most recent Civil Rights Bill. This is fascinating. You couldn't put a case before the Supreme Court on the grounds that the Declaration of Independence said so and so and so and so. You couldn't.
And the fact
Supreme Court would not accept it as an argument, because they would tell you that the Declaration of Independence is not a legal or fundamental document in our government. But they take it out and wave it in front of you all the time in school and say, see, this is what you are, this is what citizenship means. As a matter of fact, persons like myself completely silenced the Bank of Life Declaration of 1776. Not just the way you thought here. If you notice here, we're wearing a little coin.
No worry.
Just typed in. I saw this in a shop over in London and realized that a cycle of action had never been completed. One of our great revolutionary heroes said that he was going to finish the revolution by bringing home the head of George III.
Steel, it's a
This night, all of them.
Keep people from pouring down the streets and hitting the White House unannounced. Each one of the circles with their radiant streets is actually a field gun emplacement, and a field gun placed at those junctures and crammed with a whiff of grape would do a great deal to discourage petitioning of the government. Now they've gotten some holes dug under some of them, underpasses of one kind or another, and they must feel a little bit defeated. Or maybe they feel terribly safe. Maybe the government feels awfully safe. What would justify it in feeling safe? The public at large, under the Sullivan Law and other laws, is not really permitted to own arms. The government itself is armed with sub-caliber machine guns and all kinds of other anti-civilian weapons. They're called anti-personnel in the war, and peace they're called anti-civilian. Large armies are maintained not to restrain aggressors, but to keep populaces in place. That is the real reason armies are maintained, although they are usually pointed outwards, with a State Department creating enough commotion on the outside of the borders of the country to make it seem reasonable. But armies of large size have as their first mission the restraint of armed uprisings amongst the population. And if it was only foreign aggression that worried governments at large, there would seldom be armies because they're expensive. They cut down the amount of pork you can take out of the barrel. You could, of course, go on manufacturing tanks, weapons, guns, and parking them in fields and keeping a militia. But a standing army does have, as a primary use and mission, the restraint of populations. But what kind of a population is it today that one would have to restrain? It's not a population that's any longer equipped with pistols and weapons, swords, so on, and any sporting rifle that you happen to have is unfortunately very inadequate against a Garand or other types of weapons which fire a rather fast, heavy slug. Submachine guns are very discouraging. I admit that you can fire a 45 with greater accuracy and almost as fast as a sub-Thompson machine gun. I've done so, but at the same time, it is a particular skill, and there aren't even very many 45s. So we see that the arms are no longer held by the public and are held by the government. In other words, the difference of armament has come into being. Whereas you have a heavily armed government and an unarmed public. In such situations, you get a deterioration of the pride of the individual citizen. That is all it deteriorates, by the way, his own pride. He recognizes, I can have no effect upon. I can be shot at, I can shoot back. There is no threat from me. No threat whatsoever. I am unarmed. I have no voice that can spit fire.
Waffle Pedro Show, last music for this edition. First ever record release, Chiquita, 8 o'clocker. And then we had Tolem and Modrizada with Facet 28. And finally, this is the one I had to cut into three parts because it's almost an hour long. It's Special Collections with LRH in his own words. So part one of three, the next few shows I'll play the other two parts because it's beautiful. And I'm going to make a wild stab that LRH is fucking L. Ron Hubbard.
It is.
Yeah.
None
of them. Some of the spiel, even though I don't know the man's voice so well, the spiel totally fit.
It's like, it's crazy. There's some Lenny Bruce in there, you know? Some like real peppy, like hopped up on speed. Yeah.
And you know, it's not extra energy. It's just your fucking fatigue centers. Okay? Remember that, people. That's why you get a face looking like a catcher's mitt after. You're a speedro, or what's the name of my town? Yeah, favorite pickup line. Nice tooth. Okay. Special Collections. Now, is this a proj, or was it a one-off trip?
Nah, Special Collections is my radio show.
Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah,
I'm working on this mind-reading thing. Till then, we'll start.
Yeah, no, it's I've been working on that project about 6 years. Every month I debut a new sound collage that is, like sometimes I delve into the archives of crazy people like L. Ron Hubbard or Jim Jones or, I've had a real nice trip using the UCLA Special Collections Department that has all Aldous Huxley's archives there, and he made all sorts of mixtapes for himself on reel to reel of like
another guy, Manly P. Hall.
Oh yeah, Manly P. Hall. Did you ever
spiels, yeah, they're up there with fucking.
All right. Nice.
These cats. Yeah. I'm gonna talk about everything that's ever happened.
Yeah, and sometimes the radio show is like radio phenomenon, like strange shortwave. Broadcasts that ham radio people have put together. Sometimes I just find digital archives that I like. Like I made a real nice ambient piece that was from the Hitachi, like heavy industries, like research and development lab where they're going in and recording factories and trying to figure out if they can get to like zero human involvement at the factories by setting up microphones and monitoring the equipment, like by its sound to figure out how things are, if things are breaking, if something needs a new belt. And it was just all of these amazing, like amazing high fidelity recordings of factory sound, just like conveyor belts running or, things like breaking, some fan going off kilter. And it was, I don't know. It was really, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Times for Men's Annoyed Button times 1,000.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember I saw them in the desert. It was the last time I ate L, 1984 or something, 83. And it sounded like the, you know, they don't have shop at school. I went to a career day. No more shop classes at school. But, man, that's what it sounded like. It was like the most hellish shop class you ever had, metal shop. Oh, man, Mufti was, like, fucking grinding. The bass guy had one big, gigantic automotive spring that was beat with a hammer.
In fact, he had a
bass with one string. Put it on the ground. He got one of them little ground pounders to level out the earth. Yeah, he just pounded the fuck out of it.
Wow. You're talking about the Desolation Center.
That gig, right.
I saw that documentary.
Okay.
But
there is something about it. And when they say industrial, right, that's the name of the label. What were they called? Genesis and Sleazy. What were they? Throb and Gristle, right? That was the name of their label. But this actually was industrial stuff.
It was industrial music.
Right. And so you find it. You're saying sounds are sounds as far as putting together music.
Yeah, I really like to hear new sounds. I really like to listen to things in different ways, you know, like I'm moving past notes. Like, we don't need notes anymore. Like, we got other ways to express, like, our feelings through sound. And, you know, it's just interesting. And I'm also, like, really interested in archives of sounds that don't exist anymore. When's the last time you heard a dial tone? You got a landline at your house?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you pick it up and listen to it. You're like, oh, there you are. I hope to be with you for another 10 years, dial tone. You know, people don't know that sound. Steam whistles. You know, back in the day, Industrial Revolution, like, steam whistles told people what time it was. They told them when to come to work, when to leave work, when school was out. You know, that was...
Yeah, there's nightmare...
That was, no, you don't
I'll
hear
tell
that
you some anymore. Nightmare manifestations of that is that Fritz Lang Metropolis.
Whew.
Yeah, it's like that's the whip cracking is that fucking whistle blowing.
Yeah.
As, it's like 2.5 out in the foot. There are versions with the whole enchilada. It's a trip, man. So, look, you're not in Boston anymore.
No, I live in L.A.
I know. So that's a big dealio, though, right? The band moved on, though, right? Elo Emo is SoCal band.
Yeah, Elo Omo is, we've been playing for 25 years, and I hope we're playing for 25 more.
Can people find it on the internet? Does it have a website?
Yeah, you can go to infrasound.org.
Spell it.
infrasound.
Okay.
.org.
Yeah, .org. Check that out. And when you get some new music, will you come back on the show and play it for me?
I absolutely will. I'd love to.
Beautiful, Sam. So much. Keep on keeping on. I love you being so passionate about music. That's beautiful.
I love music, and I love the bass, you know?
Yeah, the bass.
Yeah, the bass.
One day, we're going to imagine a conversation between James Jamerson and Charles.
One day, when I get off the phone with you, I'm going to go think about that conversation.
Okay. People, it's been October 20, 2021. Dishwap Peter should keep your powder dry.